Okay, good evening, everybody, and thank you very much for joining me this evening to learn a little bit of Torah and to hopefully gain some sort of inspiration heading into Yom HaKippurim. I apologize about the inconvenient time of a Thursday night. I was just figuring that on Motzai Shabbos there are going to be so many great Rabbanim from throughout the country that are going to be giving a Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. I wanted to hear them, so instead I decided to give on Thursday night. This shiur is being sponsored by the BKNW board in honor of those that contributed and continue to contribute to creating a superb Yomim Noraim experience at our shul under very trying circumstances, specifically our Gabayim, our Bali Tfila, especially when they're the same people, and our seating committee, who put in a tremendous effort to be able to make the Yom Noraim davening a real Yom Noraim davening, even with severe limitations, and put in tremendous hours into it. And if I could just add, the board is sponsoring, they wouldn't say it, but the BKNW board for all of the hours of preparation that were put in to the Yom Noraim. We thank them very much. You know, in most years, the challenge of Shabbos Shuvah is to find, you look back at the year and find, like, what's the message? You know, a lot of times it's even hard to remember what happened that year. You know, what were the major events of that year? Because we're just living our lives day to day and not much changes on a day-to-day basis. And this year, obviously, we know where we're supposed to find our message. The challenge is what that message is. Meaning, it's very obvious that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he took out the megaphone this year and he spoke very, very loudly. But sometimes, even with a megaphone, and you know that there's a very loud noise, but it's muffled. You don't hear what the words are. And it's important for us to try to figure out what exactly is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us, or at least to the best of our ability. We can never know for certain, but at least to try to understand what are some of the messages that we can take from this year. And that's our job as Jews always. Whenever anything happens in the world, we're always supposed to see the messages, even in very small things in life. I think I recently told the Maisa, I was reading the Rav Noach Weinberg biography, and it said a Maisa, just a very simple Maisa, that there was this fellow by the name of Aryeh Markman who broke his foot, and he was hobbling through the old city on crutches, and he ran into Rav Noach Weinberg, and Rav Noach Weinberg saw him, and he saw the condition that he was in, and he said, "Nu, what's the message?" Like anything that happens in your life, you broke your foot, what's the message? So if something big happens, so certainly it's incumbent upon us to figure out what the message is. But what we're going to do this year is a little bit different in the sense that, well, it's obviously very different. I'm sitting here in my office instead of in front of shul. It's not Shabbos. I mean, there are a lot of differences. But one of the differences is that I was always taught that when we want to learn about tshuva, there are fantastic svarim on tshuva. Obviously, there are some classics, the Rabbeinu Yonah on Shari Tshuva. I mean, there are classics on tshuva, the Mabit. There are absolute classics. But when we want to learn about tshuva, the first place we always look is the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. I was just looking over this drasha about a half hour ago, and I realized there's not a single Rambam, I don't think, in the entire drasha. We're not gonna go in that direction this year, because this year I'd like to talk about a piyut that's said in the Chazaras Hashatz of Musaf on Yom HaKippurim, probably the most famous of all the piyutim, and that is the piyut of Eila Ezkara. Eila Ezkara is the piyut that deals with the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 great martyrs who we read about twice a year. We read about them on Tisha B'Av, and we read about them on Yom HaKippurim. On Tisha B'Av, it's Arze HaLevanon is the name of the piyut, and on Yom Kippur, the piyut is Eila Ezkara. And Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his printed essays, The Lord is Righteous in All of His Ways, pages 253 to 257, describes the difference between what the theme of the Asara Haruge Malchus is meant to be on Yom Kippur and what it's meant to be on Tisha B'Av. You know, my daughter asked us at dinner the other night, she said her teacher wanted to know, her teacher told her to ask her father, I don't know if they had all the girls ask their fathers, what the topic of their Shabbos Shuvah Drasha is going to be. So I said that, I told her, the topic of the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha is going to be the Asara Haruge Malchus, and perhaps to connect it to some of those that we lost this year, the Karbanos that we had this year in the Jewish world. And the unanimous reaction of my family was, Oh gosh, I don't want to hear that. You know, that's depressing. We don't want to be inspired. We don't want to be depressed. We want to be entertained. We don't want to be depressed. And one of the things Soloveitchik points out is that on Yom Kippurim, Eila Ezkara is not meant to be depressing. Meaning, it's not meant as avelus. On Tisha B'Av, absolutely. On Tisha B'Av, the tears should be flowing. It should be a sense of avelus that we lost these Torah giants and we are mourning for these Torah giants. On Tisha B'Av, what we're emphasizing is that that Misas Tzadikim is Gedola Misrefas Beis Elokeinu, that it has a greater impact than the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. And on the day of Churban Beis Hamikdash, that's what we emphasize. We emphasize the Churban Beis Hamikdash of losing people who are Kedoshim. But on Yom Kippur, it's different. On Yom Kippur, it's not Avelus. On Yom Kippur, what we focus on is Kapara. It's right there in the name of the day. Kapara. It's all about atonement. And Misas Tzadikim has a koach hakapara. It has a certain power of atonement. We describe the story in great detail here on Yom Kippur. We do not do so on Tisha B'Av. And the reason we describe it in great detail and the lead up to the killings of these 10 people, we describe how they were told, this is what you're facing. And they said, give us a few days. And they had to consult to see Minashamayim, whether this is a gzar din Minashamayim. Kiblu aleichem yedidim. Ultimately, what became clear. I'm getting some feedback. I don't know what just happened. Sorry, one second. Okay, hopefully that will be better. Ultimately, what came clear was that the misa of these 10 tzaddikim was voluntary. They chose it. They chose to give themselves up. They gave themselves up. They submitted to the inscrutable will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in that sense, this is a karban. A karban is something that we voluntarily bring. We have a chiyuv to bring karbanos very often, a karban chatos, karban asham. It's an absolute chiyuv. Karban tamid for the tzibur is an absolute chiyuv. But it's something that we do, meaning, yes, we have chiyuvim, but we have bechira chavshis. And these tzaddikim had bechira. Kiblu aleichem yedidim. They chose to make this sacrifice. It's based on the Gemara Menachos, the idea that Misas Tzadikim is a korban. It's based on Gemara Menachos Tav Kuf Yud that Michael Sar Hagadol Omeru Makrival of Korban. And Tosus over there says that it refers to Nishmosein Shal Tzadikim. That when we talk about the angel Michael bringing a korban, the korban that he was bringing was the Nishamos of Tzadikim. It's the ultimate korban, and that's why it's part of the Seder Havoda on Yom HaKippurim. Because the life of a tzaddik is the most precious commodity in the world. And if the idea of a korban is, look, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm giving up of myself. I spent money on this expensive animal, and I'm supposed to view it as if it should have been me. It should have been my blood, the way the Ramban describes the meaning of a korban. We're doing that with Misas Tzadikim. And that's the primary focus on Yom HaKippurim. The Misas Tzadikim as a kapara. So let's take a look at Eila Ezkara a little bit and see some of the anomalies and some of the lessons that can be derived from Eila Ezkara. So first of all, if you actually read the piyut, there's almost a disturbing emphasis on shoes in the piyut, which is a little bit strange. Meaning, we're talking about, you know, I would have put a lot more emphasis on the modes of death that these tzaddikim suffered, on what their reactions were to their fate, on the and all of that is discussed as well. But you look at the piyut and it describes how these tzaddikim were confronted with Mechiras Yosef. And what about Mechiras Yosef? La'orchas Yishma'elim sachruhu uba'ad na'alayim nasnuhu. That not only did they sell him to the Yishma'elim, but it was for shoes that they sold him to the Yishma'elim. Why is that an important part? And not only that they mentioned that they were sold for shoes, he actually made a demonstration. He was so demonstrative in showing that it was about the shoes. That it was because what did he do? He before he confronted the tzaddikim, gava lev begadolim v'tziva lemalos platero na'alim. He said, "Fill my entire palace with shoes." That was the idea. And then bring the tzaddikim in. And they're going to see the shoes. They're going to see all of these shoes piled up. And then I'll confront them and I'll say, why did you sell your brother for shoes? I mean, fill up with some other imagery. You want to show pictures of people who aren't getting along with their brothers. Show something. But shoes? Why are shoes the image of Yosef? I don't know. I would have said a ksonas pasim, a nice colorful coat. He should have had that hanging there and said, look, a mechiras Yosef, the colorful coat. But shoes? Why is that what was chosen as the symbol of mechiras Yosef? Furthermore, the very idea that min ha-shamayim they were told that yes, this is appropriate, that you deserve to die for the sin of Mechiras Yosef, is very disturbing from a hashkafic perspective. We don't punish for the sins of the fathers. Lo yimsu avos al banim u'banim lo yimsu al avosam. Even Roman law only punishes somebody for their own crimes. But Jewish law, for sure, only punishes someone for their own crimes. So this was a break from Jewish law. It was a break from Roman law. So why would the Romans be willing to do it? And why are the Jews willing to accept it? And why is this? Min ha-shamayim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought that this was the right thing. Furthermore, the story includes HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, when the malachim start complaining, and the malachim saying, oh, Ribono Shlolem, what's happening over here? These holy tzaddikim, these are the misos, mishunos. Ribono Shlolem says, Imesh makol, if I hear another sound out of you. Right, so how does that sentence normally end? If I hear another sound out of you. So over here, it's Hefoch esa'olam kulaliyam. Usually people that start that sentence don't know how to end it, right? If I hear another sound out of you, I don't want to say anything. But Hefoch esa'olam kulaliyam. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to turn the whole world over. I'm going to turn the whole world, I'm going to bring back the Mabul. And that seems incorrect also, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made one promise to mankind after the Mabul, and that was, there's not going to be another Mabul. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to bring back Sovavo. It's all going to go back to emptiness. How could that be a statement that the Ribbono Shel Olam makes? How could that be a Taina? It sounds like almost that the Malachim had a better Taina and the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't have an answer. Can you say such a thing? We can't say such a thing. But it sounds like that's what... That's why... Don't say another word. I don't want to hear it. Difficult to understand. And probably the greatest difficulty that the scholars wrestle with about the Asara Ruge Malchus is that there's no way this story happened as presented. Historically, it could not have happened as presented. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel died in around the year 70 CE. Rabbi Akiva was martyred following the failure of the Bar Kokhba revolt in 135 CE. So that's quite a difference of years. And we're also unsure as to the identity of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. And there are different versions of who the 10 martyrs even were. And it's also strange that the killing of 10 great Chachamim like this together wouldn't even warrant mention in the Gemara. Now, some of them are mentioned, but that's just highlights the question even more. If some of them are mentioned, why not mention the fact that this was part of a larger program to kill 10 of them? Apparently, it doesn't seem that it happened as was described, so much so. I found in Rabbi Yehuda Henkin's Tshuvas, Shailas Tshuvas B'nei Banim Chelik Beisim Beis, where he tells a lot of the Hanhagos of his great meaning outstanding, superb grandfather, not like four generations, his grandfather, Rav Yosef Elio Henkin's Zichron Levrach, he writes, Va'od mana hagon mori zikni milomer apiyut eile eskra b'yom ha-kippurim. Unbelievable. He says Rav Henkin wouldn't say eile eskra on Yom Kippur. Ki amar shesipur asar sham eino emes, that it's not true. Story's not true. Kemo sheyadua shasar ruge malchus lo nergu bizman echad. They weren't killed at one time. Eli yeshlomar b'mekomo piut arzei halvanon mikinos tishbav. He didn't skip it entirely. He held that it was important to talk about the asar ruge malchus, but Rav Henkin would instead say the tishbav piut instead of eile eskra the way we have it because of its historical inaccuracy. The sefer shalshelas hakabbalah. Sefer Shalshelas HaKabbalah writes, Omer ani, ki sheker nachlu avoseinu, laha min shavos yochlu bosar v'shinei banim tekehana. That it's sheker to tell us that a previous generation sinned and the later generation is going to have to suffer for it. V'lo nergu kol ha-chachmeahem zulasi k'tzas ha-kosu b'gemara. And not all of these chachamim were actually martyred, a few of them, that it tells the story in the Gemara. Rav Shmuel Gamliel, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Dvambava, Chanin Mitradyon, Chayotzei. And the Gemara tells us by some of them why they died. And it wasn't about the Mechiras Yosef. It was about some Avera that they did, or some Avera that their generation did. So it's just historically not accurate, says the Sefer Shalshalas HaKabbalah. Now, what's the Sefer Shalshalas HaKabbalah? We should point out, the Chida writes in Shema Gedolim, Ube'emes ein la'abir hazman lahasig alav. He says, I don't want to waste my time arguing on the Shalshalas HaKabbalah, because it's a waste of time. Because the way he wrote the book is whatever he heard from other people, he would just write down. Whether it was accurate, not accurate, he would just write whatever he heard. And he said, I'm just stunned that there were Gedolei Yisrael that took him seriously. So I can't take this Sefer Shalshal Zakabalah seriously at all. Okay, but the bottom line is, though, his tainas are strong tainas. It didn't happen. So again, four basic questions on this story as we have it in the piyut. Number one, why the emphasis on the shoes? That's probably the most, I don't know if that's the most disturbing, but it's strange. That's the strangest of the four. The emphasis on the shoes. Second, it seems unjust from a Jewish perspective to punish a later generation for the sins of the earlier generation. Third, the story includes Hashem saying, stop it, don't say another word or else I'm going to make another mabul. Hashem promised us he's not going to make another mabul. And fourth, the story seems to be woefully historically inaccurate. Maybe one lesson, and I wouldn't call this the answer to the questions, but an answer to the questions, is that clearly when we point to Mechiras Yosef, what we're really pointing to is Sinas Chinam. The Targum Yonasan in Bereishis, Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Chav Ches, says that the brothers bought shoes with the proceeds of the sale of Yosef. It's really based on the Pasuk in Navi. The Pasuk in the second parak of Amos actually makes direct reference, Al Machram Bekesef Tzadik Ve'evyon Ba'avor Na'alayim, that they sold a tzadik for shoes. And the understanding is, the Targum Yonasan understands, that tzadik is a reference to Yosef. And they sold Yosef for some shoes. But what is it about the shoes? And what does shoes have to do with Sinas Chinam? What does shoes have to do with not caring enough for their brother, not being there for their brother? So there's a beautiful comment of the Be'er Yosef in Parsha Shemos. On the Pasuk where Moshe Rabbeinu is at the burning bush, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Al Tikrav Halom, don't come close, Shal Nalecha Me'al Raglecha, take off your shoes. And because the makam that you're standing on is Admas Kodesh, you're not allowed to stand here with shoes. And the Be'er Yosef discusses, well, what is that? That because it's a holy place, you're not allowed to wear shoes? And it seems that that's consistent in Judaism, right? We go into the Beis HaMikdash, we don't wear shoes. In Har Bayis, we don't wear shoes. We go, we approach Yom Kippur, we don't wear shoes. Why? Not because we're in Avelus, there's no Avelus in Yom Kippurim. No, it's because we are in a holy space, we're in a holy time. And apparently, with this encounter with holiness, this encounter with Kedusha, we take off our shoes. So what's all that about? So says the Be'er Yosef. Be'er Yosef was Rav Yosef Salant, who was named after his great-grandfather, who was also Rav Yosef Salant, who was a Rebbe of Rav Yisrael Salanter. But Rav Yosef Zundel Salant, he died in the 1980s, and he used to give drashas in Eretz Yisrael. I think he maybe moved to Eretz Yisrael as a child, and he was born in Europe, and he used to give drashas all over the in Yerushalayim somewhere. And they say that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach used to attend his drashas. And Rav Shlomo Zalman told him that he should really write down these drashas, that he should really publish them, and it's because of Rav Shlomo Zalman that we have the fantastic Sefer Be'er Yosef. That's about all I know about him. There's very little information on the internet about Rav Yosef Salant. There's not a single picture of him that I've ever seen. I think maybe once I saw a picture somewhere, but I couldn't find one. Certainly, Google Images was not helpful in terms of finding a picture. I found a lot of pictures of his book, but not a single picture of Rav Yosef Salant. But it's a fantastic, fantastic Sefer on Chumash. And what Rav Yosef Salant tells us is that we know the Kuzari writes that there are four levels of creation. There's domain, that which has no life to it whatsoever. There's someach, plant life, which is able to grow and it's nourished. There's balechayim, which are higher than someach. They're actually living things, creatures like animals. And then there's chay medaber. There's a human who can speak. And then above that, there's klal Yisrael. And he points out that whenever one encounters a higher level of than yourself, it's inappropriate to demonstrate your mastery over the lower levels. Meaning it's inappropriate for one to express a sense of srara when you're right in front of someone who is greater. There's a halacha, Talmud al Yoreh b'makom Rabbi, you're not allowed to paskin halacha in front of Rabbi. But the guy that's asking you a shayla is not your Rabbi. The person that's asking you a shayla relies on you for shaylas and asks you all the time and maybe doesn't know the answers and that's why they're asking you. Yeah, but in front of your Rabbi, you're not a Rabbi. In front of your Rabbi, you're a Talmud. And there's a certain etiquette to that. And Rav Yosef Slan says that's the idea of shoes. Shoes represent that we're able to take an animal. Shoes means leather shoes. It's what it means always in halacha. That we're able to take an animal. We're able to take the chai, and we're able to take the behema, rather, and we're able to show we are a chai medaber. We are humans. So we can step on these and use these for our own benefit, for our own comfort, for our own support. But when we approach the Ribbono Shel Olam, we come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, then it's totally inappropriate. It's totally inappropriate for us to be wearing shoes in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, there's no mastery whatsoever. In front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're completely humbled. And an encounter with the Shekhinah humbles a person. That's why the very posture we're supposed to have for tefillah is a posture of being bent over, of being kafuf in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it happens to be that when we think we are in control, when we think that we have a sense of srara, we tend to lose respect for others. We tend to devalue other people. But the more we realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, the more caring we become to His children. The more we realize that there's someone above us and that His greatest wish is that we take care of each other, that we take care of all of His children, well, then the more likely we are to treat others properly. So shoes represent our submission to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the story of Asara Ruge Malchus. That's why there's an emphasis on turning the world back to nothingness, because we can't understand Hashem. Ilu yadati v'yisiv is the lashon of the Gaon, that if I of Sadia Gaon, if I was able to understand Hashem, I would be Hashem. Turning the world back to nothingness is the mashal that the Medrash gives of you want the tailor to account for every last square inch of fabric that you gave him to make the suit. He would have to pull apart the whole suit and show you where he used each inch of fabric. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "I'll turn the world so vavo," not a literal "I'll turn the world so vavo." But if you want to understand me, that's what I would have to do. You can't understand why I do what I do. There has to be a certain submission to the Ratzon Hashem. And when one submits to Ratzon Hashem, one is much more likely to value other people and take care of other people. And if this year has taught us anything, it's that we are not in control. I was talking to someone this week who said, "You remember early in the year there was a story about scientists celebrating some further finding of the God particle. They found the God particle a while ago, but there was some major finding, and it was like the great victory of science over God, the great victory of science over religion, and it was a big story. It purportedly, the finding of the God particle, I don't even know what it means, but it makes a God who designed the world redundant." And then what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? It's just unbelievable. He sends something microscopic. How tiny? You know the story of Titus? Titus HaRasha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to humble him. So what does the Gemara tell us? He sends a gnat, and a gnat flies up his nostril and starts pecking away at his brain. And look, Titus, you think you're so powerful, you think you're so mighty, you succumb to a little gnat. You put the coronavirus next to that gnat looks like the Empire State Building. Something so microscopic, something so, so tiny. And it brought the entire science world, the entire world of advanced knowledge, the entire modern world that we live in, to its knees. And made them all look like idiots. Don't wear a mask, do this, do that. It's passed this way, it's that way. Antibodies mean something, they don't mean anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the tiniest little thing and said, "You think you're in charge? You think there's some power here? You think you have control of anything? There's a Ribbono Shel Olam in this world. He could take a gnat and he could take something much smaller than a gnat and bring it to your knees." All of a sudden, the entire scientific world looks like a bunch of primitive fools. The Asara Ruge Malchus were nitfas pa'avon hador. The generation sin was sin aschinam, and it's a sin that repeats itself each and every generation. How do I know? Because we still don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And Chazal tell us that when we fix that, we'll have a Beis HaMikdash. That was the cause of the Churban Bayis Sheni. So it has its ancient roots in Mechiras Yosef. But not that they were being punished for Mechiras Yosef per se. They were being punished for a generation that still hadn't learned the lesson of Mechiras Yosef. So of course this is not a historical account. It's the story of all of Jewish history. Tzaddikim who pay the price for our failure to love each other. For our failure to learn the lessons of Mechiras Yosef. And that's probably the answer to all of the questions. The emphasis of the idea of shoes is stop acting like you're a master. Stop acting like you control anything. Because when you realize that the Ribbono Shel Olam is in charge, you'll realize that the greatest thing you could do is serve the Ribbono Shel Olam and take care of the rest of his children and love them. We don't punish for the sin of the fathers. We punish for failure to learn the lesson of the sin of the fathers. And yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll turn the world to kulo liyamim. Not in a literal sense, I'll bring another marble, but that's what I would have to do to even give you an inkling, an understanding of what I'm all about. So it's not a historical account, but we're allowed to read it, and we do read it. We don't do like Rav Henkin, and instead read the piyut from Tisha B'Av. We're not interested in history as a story in history. We're interested in the entirety of Jewish history. And the lessons that we failed to learn. Misa Sadiqim Mechaperas, the Gemara Moed Katan Tav Chav Ches tells us, Amar Rabbi Ami, Lama Nismucha Misas Miriam Leparshas Parah Aduma. Why is the Misa of Miriam juxtaposed with the Parsha of Parah Aduma? Lomer Lecha to tell you, Ma Parah Aduma Mechaperas Af Misas and Shal Sadiqim Mechaperas. That just like the Parah Aduma provides Kapara, so too Misas Sadiqim provides Kapara. And how does it provide kapara? How does the death of tzaddikim provide kapara? Says the Meiri on that Gemara Moed Katan Chav Ches, Hachai Yitein Alibo. Because it causes introspection, it causes tefillah. Not finger pointing, introspection. Why the para of all things to compare Misa tzaddikim to? Why does the Torah choose the para? A number of different approaches, each one so instructive. Says the Toldos Yitzchak, it's only mechaper for a person who is broken. By it. The Parah Aduma is turned to ash first. The Misas Tzadikim is only mechaper if a person appreciates what a Misas Tzadik means. The Yismach Moshe similarly explains, a Parah is nifsal behesach hadas. Misas Tzadikim won't work if you're Masiach Das from the loss. If you forget about the loss. If you immediately shift your focus onto something else. And Ribbono Shel Olam, how quickly we've forgotten about our losses. How quickly we've forgotten how devastating those losses can be. How eager we have shown ourselves to be, to move on. To just get on with our lives, forget this ever happened. Misa Tzadikim is Mechaper when it stays with us. Not to walk around depressed all day. But not to forget in an instant. Oh, the hesped's over? Okay, now we move on. No, a hesach hadas passels the entire Misas Tzadikim. Meshech Chachma writes, the Parah Aduma is not only mechaper, but it brings tahara. Similar to the Gemara tells the story of the Baryoni who took upon themselves to do tshuva, these thugs took upon themselves to do tshuva after Rabbi Zeira died because they realized that nobody's there to daven for them once Rabbi Zeira's gone. In Hadei of Adibur of Zalman Saratskin writes that that's why it's in the plural, Misa Tzadikim, because it usually takes more than one for us to look inward. A tzadik dies, okay, kachi darka shalol, and people die. And then another one, maybe I'll start to think. And another one, hundreds, thousands? And then we start to look inward. There's a void that needs to be filled. We have a tremendous void. A tremendous void that needs to be filled. You know, I was talking to someone today about the Chilul Hashem. Someone said, what a Chilul Hashem. You pointed me to a news story, which Taka was a Chilul Hashem, but I'm not going to get into that. So you know what Chilul means? Chilul means like a halal, a void, a vacuum. There's a Chilul Hashem that's been going on in the world that we have to look very hard and very closely inside of ourselves and see what we've done to contribute to that Chilul Hashem. Chilul Hashem in the literal sense, a vacuum of Hashem, an absence of our appreciation and recognition of Hashem. I don't know if there's ever been this much bittul Torah in the world. How many yeshivas are closed? How many people who normally would be learning in a normal context are now unable to? And Rav Asher Weiss said the other day, we have to look at ourselves and say, was it really worth being able to dance at a chasana without the mask? To have that kind of Chilul Hashem? To be missing that amount of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How many minyanim are shut down or limited? How many months we went without being able to connect to Hashem in our normal way? That is Chilul Hashem. We have to make up for that missing of Hashem, for missing Kedusha. You know, I got a text this week. I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but Alex Herman texted me Shaila about something, and it was like 10:30 at night here. So I texted him back an answer, meaning I saw it at 10:30 at night. I don't know when he sent me the Shaila. I texted him back an answer, and right away he responds, thank you very much. Like, Alex, it's 5:30 a.m. You're in Israel. What are you doing? And he said, well, yeah, I've been davening Vasikin every day and also going to the yeshiva regular minyan because I missed so much Kaddish. So I want to make up for the Kaddishim that I missed. Guy davens Shachris twice a day. I mean, not literally, but davens at a Shachris minyan twice a day. A chilul, there's a vacuum, there's a void. We need to fill that void with Kedusha. We need to fill that void with a connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Torah Tamima writes that Parah represents, something else represents, a mother. The Tikkun of the Egel, that's what Parah Aduma was according to Chazal. Rashi and Chumash quotes it. Tosos Moed Katan, Ma Parah Aduma Mechaperes, makes this point, when a mother dies, the children are broken, and they show kavod. It's not the death that's Mechaper so much as it is the Avelus in feeling unsettled and insecure. In feeling that when a child loses a parent, no matter how old they are really, their foundations crumble a bit. And that's Parah Aduma. That's Misas Tzadikim. The role of Tzadikim in our lives, Kasher Yisa Ha'omei Nesayonek, the Chumash says, describes the role of Moshe Rabbeinu, like a mother takes care of their young. And that's the Kapara, that we feel unsettled, that we feel out of sorts, and that we realize we therefore have to connect to the only stable thing that's been here since the beginning of time, and that is the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Iyun Yaakov writes, while most Karbonos Tzibur are males, the Parah Aduma is in a keva, and therefore it's teaching us that Misas Nashim Tzidkanios is also Mechaper. And that's why we dafka use the mashal of Parah Aduma. Rav Pavarsky in Bad Kodesh points out that the replacements of mikdash that we normally have in our lives, Torah learning, davening and shul, usually those aren't the things that women are emphasizing in their lives. So we dafka choose para, which is not an avodas pnim. It's not even in the mikdash, and it's still mechaper. Because our religion isn't limited to the mikdash. Even without shul, there's religious growth to be had. Even without yeshiva, there's defining ourselves completely as a ben Torah or a bas Torah. You know, this is like a major difference, or Meir Tversky pointed out, a major difference between the hashkafa of Western society and a Jewish hashkafa. The hashkafa of Western society, even those segments of Western society that value religion and that recognize that religion is a thing that people may want to do, but that's what it is. It's a thing that people may want to do. So, you know, the political candidate, if he wants to stand a chance in the Bible Belt, has to say that he goes to church and, you know, and point to a church and say, that's the church I go to. True, not true, doesn't matter. Right? But he has to say, because that's what religion is, that you go to a church, that you go to a shul, that you go to a synagogue, that you're koveya itim l'Torah, you have time that you learn Torah. That's religion, but that's not really what religion is. Religion is that our entire lives are avodas Hashem. One of the manifestations of that avodas Hashem is how we daven in shul, and how we run to a beis medrash. That's a manifestation of avodas Hashem. But being a religious Jew means everything we do is avodas Hashem. When we go to work, it's avodas Hashem. When we exercise, it's avodas Hashem. When we eat, it's avodas Hashem. Everything is avodas Hashem. And just how religiously disorienting this year has been has uncovered a tremendous wart in Klal Yisrael. And that is that for many people, avodas Hashem was really limited to those places and those things. If a person holistically lives as an Eved Hashem, everything that we do is an Eved Hashem, we were not divorced from Hashem. In one of the many meetings we had with Rabbanim, one of the Rabbanim was telling, not from our area, a rabbi from somewhere else, was telling Rav Twersky Shlita about how he's seen people just completely fall off religiously. The socially orthodox now don't have any orthodoxy left. Because if their entire orthodoxy was being social and shul, was going to shul and, you know, having the kiddush and standing there for davening and doing, so now there's no orthodoxy left. And Rav Twersky just pointed out, this sped up that process, but that was bound to happen anyway. Meaning, if someone is socially orthodox, then they're not. There's no Torah mitzvahs. Torah mitzvahs means that we're in Eved Hashem through and through. So let's go through some of the Asara Haruge Malchus and maybe some of the lessons that we can learn from the specific Haruge Malchus. First of all, it should be noted, many of these Haruge Malchus were Zikanim Muflagim. They were people in their 90s. They were very, very old, many of them. And yet we cry tears over them. Because yes, we value our elders. We don't say, okay, it's only a threat to old, the old and the infirm. Who had such a hashkafa? It's only a threat to the old and the infirm. It doesn't matter to me so much. The old and the infirm is the survival of the fittest. That's the Nazis. That's not us. We believe that the older people are part of our future. They educate our entire future. We're midgets standing on the shoulders of giants. And we don't want them to let us go so fast. We don't want them to fall out from underneath us. So let's go through some of the Asar Haruge Malchus, not all of them. Rabbi Shimon begged to be taken before Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, so he wouldn't have to witness the death of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. When Rabbi Shimon was beheaded, Rabbi Shmuel took his head and said, "Ei haloshon amemeheres lahoros bimrei shefer." This is the tongue that spoke the beautiful words of Torah. How could it now lick the dirt? The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Yud Aleph tells us that Shmuel HaKatan, who was the author of Birchas HaMinim, predicted before he died that Shimon v'Yishmael yehargu b'cherev v'chavroi l'ktala. He predicted this would happen. But look at this beautiful image of two Gedolei Torah and each one wanting to be the first. Because it hurt more to see someone else suffer than to suffer ourselves. Essentially each one was saying, I'd rather die than have to watch the other one die. How many people can we say that about in our lives? That we love them so much that we'd rather be hurt than see them hurt. We'd rather die than watch them die. You know, in the Rav Noach Weinberg biography, it said that when he was in his final illness, sometimes you read the biography, but you know, like he was a very unusual personality. It's not like your classic Gadol biography. It was very clear what his agenda was, and it was just this passionate obsession with Klal Yisrael, and with trying to track down. He really believed he can get every last neshama. He really believed he can get every last Jew, and he viewed his life as a failure because he didn't. It's just like unbelievable. In his very in his final illness, Rav Noach Weinberg was his body was failing him. He was in excruciating pain. And you know how doctors ask sometime before they administer pain medicine? On 1 to 10, right? How bad is the pain? Or we should know from such things. But you know, after childbirth, sometimes you know they'll when they're giving the pain medicine to a woman, we should know from that kind of thing, I guess. How bad is the pain? They need to know how much medicine to give. Where does it hurt? What do you feel? They would ask Rav Noach Weinberg, what hurts? And every time the same answer, Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael hurts. No, we don't mean that, Rabbi. But that's what really hurts. That's what really hurts. Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, and Rabbi Shmuel, who is beautiful, had his skin flayed. He screamed out when they got to the Makom Tefillin. And that's where the Malachim couldn't understand the ways of Hashem. That's where they complained. Sarafei Mala Tzaku B'mara Zu Torah V'zu Schara. And that's where the Baskel had to say, Gzerihim Elefanai Kiblua. And stop, otherwise I'm going to turn the whole world to Mayim. The Gemara of Al-Dazar Yer Aleph elaborates that they made a mask of his face, and on a special Roman festival that happened once every 70 years, the mask was worn by an Adam Shalem riding on an Adam Chiger, an able-bodied person riding on a person who was not able-bodied, who was disabled, to signify the rulership of the Bnei Esav over the Bnei Yaakov. And Tos Rid writes that it was every 70 years to indicate that Golus Romi was ongoing, because Golus Babel was only 70 years. So every time another 70 years passed, the Romans would celebrate, look, it's still not over. The last Golus was 70 years, ours is still going. In the 8th paragraph of Maseches Machos, it tells us before they were taken to be killed, one asked the other why he was crying, if after all, he's so close to being with the Tzaddikim in Gan Eden. Yeah, but look at how we're dying. We're being killed like those who are killed in Mises Beis Din, the worst sinners. Amalo Rebbe, Shema Soedi Yisa Yashen, Uba Yisha Lishal Anidasa. So he said, no, I think I know why we're being killed. Were you ever eating a meal or maybe sleeping, and then someone called with a shayla? Well, to a woman had maybe a nidashayla, Vamartala, Hamtini Achishan. And he said, don't bother me now. I'm sleeping now. Just wait till the morning. Vatora, Amar Kal Alman of Yasam Losan. Varakti Eschem Becharev. Wow. The level of sensitivity to Shalom Bayis. That, yeah, you need to sleep, but someone's Shalom Bayis is at stake. And to work to make sure, and give of yourself, and give up of oneself, to make sure that we're doing whatever we can to ensure the shalom bayis of others. We have a crisis, a shalom bayis crisis among young couples. I mean, I probably see it more than most, because I deal with a lot of young couples, and Baruch Hashem, many of them are doing great. But there's a real crisis. Someone called me the other day, a person of means, called me the other day, and he said, I'm looking for a project. I want to do something to help Klal Yisrael. What's the problem that you see in Klal Yisrael? He wasn't just calling me, he was calling like 10 other rabbis also. I somehow made the short list. I was like, you know, it would be helpful if like you gave me a few days to think about it before just you know, putting this question on me. Okay, I don't know. I have $10 million to spend on helping Klal Yisrael. He didn't say that, but let's say. So what's the project? The first thing that came to mind is Shalom Bayis. First thing that came to mind is to train young people before they get married how to be married, how to relate to each other. Fund the Shalom workshops that Shalom Task Force does. Or therapists throughout in every community that be, you know, every chassan knows they go to a chassan teacher, every kala knows they go to a kala teacher. They should know that they need to learn a little bit about skills of marriage. And we shouldn't be too proud, those of us who've been married for decades, to learn more and to improve. Then we move on to Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us the story of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, how he risked his life and ultimately gave his life to teach Torah Barabbin. He knew that he was going to get killed for it. Rav Salvechik in the Rav Salvechik Machzor on page 643 in the Yom Kippur Machzor So, you know, the story was that the executioner, they had put in wet wool to slow the burning so that he wouldn't die quickly. And the executioner said, if I remove it, what's going to happen to me? He said, you'll be zochet olam haba. And he removed the wool to allow him to die faster, and he jumped in with him, and he also died. And the executioner of the Gemara says, Yesh kona olamo b'sha'a achas. He's mezumen l'chayel mabar, rather. And Bacha Rebbe v'amar, Rebbe cried out, and he said, wow, you could be kona olamo b'sha'a achas, or you could be kona olamo b'har b'shanim. Says Rav Soloveitchik, you see the power of hear her tshuva? This guy was an executioner, a Roman executioner. He was awful. His whole life, he was terrible. But Shah Achas, one moment. Look what he did in a moment with Hira Tshuva. I got a text from a young man who's in his first year of learning in Eretz Yisrael. And he said, I remember last year, Shabbat Shuva, you spoke about, and if I had to finish that sentence, I don't think I would have been able to. I have no idea what I spoke about last year, but he told me, he reminded me. You spoke about doing Tshuva, not only for particular Averos, but doing Tshuva for Midos, and the importance of doing tshuva for Midos, but you never described how to do tshuva for Midos. The Rambam clearly describes how to do tshuva for Averos. There's a program. How do you do tshuva for Midos? So I said, if memory serves, I think the point was that that's the kona olama b'sha'achas. How are you kona olama b'sha'achas? It's hareya mekudeshes li amanas shanit tzadugamur. Mekudeshes. Why is she mekudeshes? You're not at tzadugamur. You've never been at tzadugamur. Because in one moment, if you define yourself that way, then that's what you become for that moment. And once you change your self-definition, the behaviors are going to follow. If a person tries to change their behaviors, they try to do tshuva by attacking each behavior and sheer willpower. By willpower, I'm going to do it. Of course you're going to lose. You need to create a construct. You need to create an environment that makes sense. If I define myself that I am a Ben Torah, then each time that something that comes up, does a Ben Torah do this? If that's how I define myself, if I'm a tzaddik, does a tzaddik do this? And that's part of the power of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur gives us a Shah Achas, to have a Hirur Tshuva, to rethink things. A number of years ago, I mentioned the story, there was an offensive lineman for the New York Football Giants, Jeff Schwartz, who apparently was Jewish. And they did a story on him because he was going to fast on Yom Kippur, even though it was like, I don't know if it was a game day or it was a practice day or whatever, it was during the season. And he was going to fast on Yom Kippur. He was having his Sandy Koufax moment, although he was Jeff Schwartz. He wasn't Sandy Koufax, but, you know. And the story said that, you know, he's an offensive lineman. 6'5", 340 pounds, you know, whatever. And it described, like, what he would eat on a normal day. And it said that, you know, on a normal day for breakfast, he would have turkey, sausage, and cheese. But he was going to fast on Yom Kippur. And when they interviewed him, he said, you know, it's not the most fun 27 hours, but it's worth it. So first of all, 27 hours. I mean, his Tosefes Yom HaKippurim is remarkable. I mean, that's like, we're out of there, you know, after 25, and we're ready to eat. Please be cloudy, you know, like, we're ready to eat. And Jeff Schwartz is keeping 27 hours. Kol olama b'sha'achas. Rabbi Chanina ben Tradi in the Gemara says was punished for a relatively minor sin of Hoges Hashem Baos Yosef because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medaktik im atzadikim kechut asara. But the Marsha says that no, you know why Rabbi really cried? He cried about the contrast between the executioner and Rabbi Chanina. That they both got Olam Haba. But look at the Olam Haba of the executioner. It was a Shah Achas Olam Haba. It's embarrassing. He only had one moment. And look what you could do. You could be a Rabbi Chanina, where every moment is Avodas Hashem. Look how powerful a moment is, and now try to multiply that by every moment we have. You know, the halacha is, we would be Mechal Shabbos, we'd have an entire team of people, an entire community of Hatzalah members, all get in their car and drive and be Mechal Shabbos to prolong a person's life by 1 second. And you know what we would call that? A mitzvah. We would say it's worth it. Because that's the value of a second. Rav Meir Twersky pointed out, Mia Isha Sherbana Bayis Velo Chanocho. The Kohen Mashuach Muhammad says, if you've recently built a house and you didn't have a chance to live in it yet, you're exempt from war. Because you invested all this time into building the house, and now it's all going to go to waste if no one ever gets to live in it. Chafetz Chaim says, ooh, what kind of house? How much time do you have to invest? Like, it was the contractor, and you had to get the fire marshal in it. Like, 3 years with all the aggravation and whatever, and all that time that was put into it, and you ran out of money, and then you raised money. All of that? You had all that? That kind of construction project? That's what we're talking about? I get that. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of frustration. That's a lot of effort. Says the Chafetz Chaim, there's a halacha. What's a house? The Gemara tells us, dalet al dalet amos, that's a house. Dalet al dalet amos, maybe as little as 6 feet by 6 feet. The effort involved in building that potters one from going to war. Why? Because it's a waste of time. The time that would have been wasted. Time is such a valuable commodity. I just got a call, mamish, right before, maybe 20 minutes before we started this evening. From my good friend, Rabbi Yechiel Weberman. And he said, Rabbi Leibowitz, remember you told me a vart 13 years ago? I'm like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. So he said, but I thought something to add to the vart. In Mafter Yonah, Yonah tells the people on the boat, Sa'uni v'hitiluni, lift me up and throw me into the water. Rav Dan Segel asks, why Sa'uni? Just say hitiluni. Says Rav Dan Segel, he asked them, to throw him on an ark, not to just throw him down, to lift him up, throw him that way. Why? What difference does it make? Because then he'll live for one more second. He'll have one more second of life. He'll have another moment. And we can't minimize the value of a moment of life, of a moment of hirhur tshuva. Lehalacha, if someone were to tell you that a single life would be saved by us wearing masks forever. La halacha, we'd be chayiv to do that. If we knew that was going to happen. Baruch Hashem, that's not what's required of us. We have to wear masks for now. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to help us, and all of this is going to pass. And we're going to have a time where that's not going to be necessary. We don't know when that time is going to be, but we're storming the heavens with our tefillos. The value of a sha'achas, of life, we have to realize most of the time, a sha'achas, you know, when something major happens in a sha'achas, it's really an accumulation of many, many sha'os. It's just that it all comes out in a sha'achas. There's a beautiful Rav Noach Weinberg story also. He used to tell people to do little things because that's the way you deal with it. You can't tell everyone to make wholesale changes. So someone who was totally unaffiliated, he told him, a college student, say Shema every night. Just say the words, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad every night. Do me a favor, do that. After a week in Eishet Torah, that's what he went home with. And he's going to say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad every night. He came back a year later and he wanted to show Rav Noach that his method didn't work. He said, look, I did it every night. I said, Shema Yisrael, Shema Elokeinu, Shema Echad, every night. And I still eat chazer, and I'm still mechal Shabbos, and I still do everything else. It had zero impact on me. But I did it. I did exactly what you said. Shema Yisrael, Shema Elokeinu, Shema Echad, every night. Rav Noach got up out of his chair and gave the guy a bear hug. And he said, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. You did it every night. And the fellow said, at that moment, while he was in Rav Noach Weinberg's embrace, he thought, I have to change my entire life. And he thought that it was that moment that did it. But of course it wasn't that moment that did it. It was every night that did it. Sometimes, the sha'achas is, it seems like a sha'achas, but it's really many, many sha'os building up. And we move on to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva darshan the crowns of the letters in the Torah, and he was scraped with the iron combs. And the Eila Eskra attributes his death to Mechiras Yosef, but the Gemara at the end of Brachos and Daf Samach Aleph says it was because he was makil kihilos berabim v'limdam Torah. Against the government decree, he gathered people to teach them Torah. The Gemara says he was killed as a punishment min Hashemayim for stopping to learn Torah from Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, because Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was in Nidoy on account of the story of Tanu Shel Echnayim, but Metziah Mentes. We believe in Adam La'amal Yulad. We're not looking for an easy life, we're looking for a meaningful one. A life of Avodas Hashem, it's an all-encompassing life. Rabbi Akiva gave up everything in order to be able to learn Torah. And it was an absolute commitment. He was never finished darshaning the crowns on the letters. Every spare moment that he had, he went to try to learn more Torah. And we could go on and on with the Asara Ruge Malchus, but I'm looking at the hours late and I want to discuss some of our karbanos from this past year. And again, not to chas v'shalom sadden anybody. It's not meant to be avelus. That's not what we're looking for over here. We're looking for appreciating a karban, appreciating what kapara is for Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael lost so many people, and I wish I could talk about each of them, but time does not allow. I don't know what my time limit is, but I guess you could all just jump off the Zoom, and that's fine too, but I still have to answer to my wife after all this, so time does not allow. But if you think about who was lost, the Novominska Rebbe, Rav Zalman Nechem Goldberg, Rav Nachum Rabinovich, Rav Chaim Dov Keller, Rav Dr. Norman Lamb, Rav Label Katz, how many Hasidish Rebbes, Rav Bakshi Daron. There's a lot to learn from each of them, but maybe just highlight some of them. Novominsk Rebbe taught Torah in many different types of yeshivas. Before setting up yeshivas Novominsk, he taught in Skokie, he taught in Breuers, kept ksharim with all of his Talmidim, with many of his Talmidim from those early years. He was known as a very effective communicator. All those of us who've attended to see him Ashas, when he would get up to speak, we'd say, oh, thank God, someone who speaks English. We knew we were going to understand that speech. Oh, he went into Yiddish for a little bit, usually, but just to show that he's legit. But he'd always come back into English. He created a yeshiva where he described that the Kedusha Slevi and the Beis Alevi could sit together on the same shelf, side by side, and will both be appreciated. And he was someone who was a tremendous Bal Achrayus. He took Achrayus for Klal Yisrael. You know, it's become very popular in our time to point fingers. Maybe the carbon of the Novominsk Rebbe is a kapara for our failure to take Achrayus. And whenever something happens that we don't like, I don't like that my children's school closed. Oh, so it must be Dr. Glatt's fault. What? How does that even make sense? Right? But that's, you know, it must be this one's fault. It's because of these people, those people. Anything but to look inside of ourselves, to take a chrayus for a situation. Rav Zalman Nechem Goldberg was an absolute Torah giant. Mishichma Lamaila, from the rest of his generation, really. One Gadol Batorah said he's not sure that Rav Zalman Nechem was any less than his father-in-law in learning. His father-in-law was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Zalman Nechem kol kulo Torah. The Torah was his world, and therefore he didn't have a political world. He had no affiliation. There were all the artificial barriers that Jews like to set up for themselves. Sfardim and Ashkenazim and Yeshivish and Haredi and Modern and Datilumi and Chiloni. Torah. The Torah was his world, and that was it. And he had the broadest shoulders and the smallest ego. There were shilas that you'd bring, people said they would bring to the greatest poskim in America, to Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, to Rav David Cohn, to Rav Herschel Schechter. And every once in a while, they would say, this is a Rav Zalman Nechemya shayla. This has to go to Rav Zalman Nechemya. And Rav Asher Weiss said about Rav Zalman Nechemya, he didn't run from kavod. He wouldn't even know what kavod is. He couldn't even identify it. It just wasn't a thing in his life. There were no gatekeepers. Anyone could walk into his apartment and just start schmoozing with him and learning. It just wasn't even something. And how many people, how many of us are so much less than that, and yet we're so worried about our own kavod? Maybe the carbon of Rav Zalman Nechemya is a carbon that should be mechaper for our desire to enhance our own kavod. Rav Nachum Rabinovich was an Aleph Beis Rebbe in Charleston, South Carolina. I mean, he was the rabbi of the shul there, but he was teaching Aleph Beis to young kids. And they said, you know, isn't this beneath you? It's Torah's Emes. Every little bit matters. And then, already, as an accomplished and established Rav, an adult, he went to Eretz Yisrael, started a new life, built a new yeshiva, a new community. And maybe Rav Nachum Rabinovich is a kapara for thinking that we're too old to dream of Eretz Yisrael. That we're too old to change, that we're too old to still grow, that we're too old to look outside of whatever construct we've already built for ourselves. Rav Noach Weinberg used to tell people, when someone tells a young idealist, you'll grow up, what they really mean is, you'll give up. Life circumstances don't determine our happiness. We need to be positive and we need to look for opportunities. Somebody once commented to a man in a wheelchair how difficult it must be to be confined to a wheelchair, and he responded, I'm not confined by my wheelchair, I'm liberated by my wheelchair. If it wasn't for my wheelchair, I'd be bedbound and never able to leave my house. Two ways of looking at the same thing. Our happiness is determined largely by our attitude, you know, almost entirely by our attitude. To always have that youthful vigor. Rav Chaim Dov Keller, some of his qualities, he was known to be capable of clearly articulating a Torah viewpoint, certainly from the Haredi perspective. And to be completely, completely unwilling to compromise on a kutzo shel yud of Torah Hashkafa as he saw it. And maybe that should be a kapara for us, sometimes being koveya the Torah le'itim instead of itim le'Torah. Sham Shrimfal Hirsch used to say that when we're asked that question, kavati itim le'Torah, the question is not just did you make time for learning, but it's that you lived in a particular milieu and there's Torah. What did you fit to conform to the other? Was it the Torah that had to conform to the world that you lived in, or did you make the world conform to the Torah? But the Torah is the rock. The Torah is the basis. And maybe the carbon of Rav Chaim Dov Keller teaches us to be mechaper for being koveya the Torah to the itim, to keep the long view of what really matters. I was reading about someone who sold life insurance for a living, who was extremely successful in Kiruv. He didn't say, I'm not a Kiruv worker, I'm a life insurance salesman. No. He wrote, selling life insurance was the Almighty's way of preparing me for Kiruv. Selling life insurance requires convincing someone to spend a large amount of money for the rest of his life on something from which he will never benefit personally, and from which no one will benefit until he dies. If you can help a person understand life insurance, you can help a person understand religion. To appreciate that there's a long view. How many people think in those terms? It starts with Torah. It starts with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It starts with being an Eved Hashem. And everything follows from that. Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam was a master darshan. That's the thing that's most celebrated. And his drushos are there for the taking. And he was very open with them. He allowed people to just completely plagiarize him. without, and I do it all the time. I was listening to one rabbi, in our yeshiva actually, I shouldn't say that broadly, but one rabbi telling his kihila, you know, whenever I say a great darshan said, and I don't quote their name, I was really referring to Rabbi Lam. I just think it's not right. I shouldn't be quoting, you know, an academic. He's a master darshan. A master darshan. But what gets less celebrated is the kind of caring person that he was, and for opening up a window into that, we owe a great debt of gratitude to Judge Dan Butler, an unbelievable article he wrote recently in Tablet about Rabbi Lam's relationship with Mikey Butler, Zichron Levrach. And he described how Rabbi Lam took it as a personal responsibility to make sure that Mikey despite everything he was going through with cystic fibrosis and all the hospital stays, and that he would be able to make it through YU, that he would be able to graduate. And this is before Zoom, before you could just Zoom everybody in. And it's no problem. Nowadays, we wouldn't think it wouldn't be an issue. And he took it as his personal responsibility. Judge Butler wrote that around Thanksgiving time, at a wedding in Memphis, I met the president of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Norman Lamb. YU has thousands of students, so I was pretty surprised that when he heard my name, he asked me if I was related to Mikey. He knew the whole story. When I endeavored to stammer out thanks for the school's remarkable efforts on Mikey's behalf, he looked at me with a puzzled expression. But that's who we are, said the world-renowned rabbi, theologian, and philosopher about his university, which was then rated among the top 50 national universities by U.S. News and World Report. But that's who we are. Oh, of course. We take care of each other. Maybe Rabbi Lamb should be a kapara for thinking that we're too important for the little guy. But sometimes we get so big on ourselves that we forget about the little people. And how important it is to take care of people who are not being matzliach. Sometimes we're attracted most to those people who are being matzliach. They're important people. They're chashuva people. What about the people that aren't having hatzlacha in professionally, in socially? To always look out for the little guy. Rav Leibel Katz was a person who decided that he was going to take it on himself in the Torah V'das dining room every day. When people are eating breakfast, they're wasting time. They're just stop eating breakfast to prepare a short halacha shir. He was the originator of the 10-minute halacha. He would describe the sugya, where it came from, where the halacha came from, show the development of halacha. And he turned on an entire yeshiva to the learning of halacha and generations of talmidim. And he needed to make it accessible to people. Young men were getting married and they didn't know anything about the halachas of Taras HaMishpacha. So he wrote the book, that for 30 years was the go-to handbook for every chassid. Preparing the next generation for Kedusha. And maybe that karban of Rav Leibel Katz, full disclosure, he's my cousin, a kapara for not bringing Hashem into our homes enough. And then two more, if I could just close. Judge Noach Dear. I'm going to leave the rabbinate for a little bit. I remember my last meaningful conversation with Judge Dear. We had a brief conversation on Purim, where, I don't know anyone who remembers Judge Dear, he never shook hands. He didn't like shaking hands. He would do the elbow thing. So I just commented, you're so far ahead of the curve. Now, no one shakes hands. Everyone does the elbow thing, and it was a joke at the time. My last meaningful conversation with him was he was trying to encourage me to get involved in a particular political relationship, to reach out to a certain politician, to help somebody in the community. And I was very reticent about the whole thing, and he consented in my voice, even though the words I was saying was okay, of course, yeah. He heard that what I was really saying was, this is not my comfort zone. This is not what I want to be doing. And he said to me, there's no such thing as not being interested in politics. Politics is how we help Yidden. It's not interest in politics, it's interest in helping Yidden. And if you can make relationships that will help Yidden, then make those relationships. I don't understand the choice. A kapara for not using our influence to help others, even if it's uncomfortable. It's not about being comfortable. It's about doing what's right. When Rav Noach Weinberg, you can tell I just finished the biography, when Rav Noach Weinberg's young daughter refused to take out the garbage one day on the grounds that I don't want to. So, you know, to most parents, it would be, they'd either start saying, I don't care what you, I didn't ask you to want to. I told you to do it. Right? That would be the line. Or, forget it, I'll just do it myself, because I don't need the confrontation. Rav Noach Weinberg, it had to be a philosophical discussion. Do you mean that you don't feel like it? Or do you mean that you don't want to? And his daughter said, I don't want to. You mean that your soul doesn't want this mitzvah? Okay, I don't feel like it. So what are you going to do? What you feel like or what your soul really wants? So she took out the garbage. It was easier than the conversation. But that's the lesson. That it's not about what's easy. It's about helping people. Yedidenu Davi Herman possessed a tremendous love of knowledge. He was a hidden genius, except he wasn't so hidden for those who ever spoke to him about topics that you know little about and you're shocked to hear how much he seems to know about it. His science background was incredible. In our Smichas Chavar Shirim, it came out a lot. Because I would say something about a Kli Rishon or a Kli Sheni or something, and, you know, what happens to the food? And, like, you know, he was like a human fact checker, you know. Such a sharp intellect. Sometimes, you know, when I prepare a Daf Yomi Shir, I listen to what I said last cycle sometimes when I'm driving to see if... usually I was better last cycle. I had more time to learn that. But every once in a while you'll hear Dovi speak up because he attended the Daf for a couple of years in there. He attended the Daf. And, you know, we have like this unspoken rule, no one speaks up. It's 40 minutes, we got to finish before... He didn't do it often, but he would ask a question. And there's only one thing all of his questions had in common, is that I didn't know the answer to any of them. But I think I said it as Levaya. Dovi was a Hagba Jew. Right? We'd have the biggest Sefer Torah, you know, like the old Bukritsky Sefer Torah. I think that was our biggest one at the time. And when it was all on the left, okay, that's Dovi's Hagba. No bending of the knees, no bending of the Torah. You know, just like that. I thought that was so symbolic. Lifting up that which we cherish the most. Lifting up that which is most important. Using our knowledge to deepen our knowledge of other areas to deepen our understanding of Torah. Lifting up our family members. Supporting our children when they're struggling in school or anything else. Maybe a kapara for not lifting up that which we cherish the most. Appreciating what is good in our lives, learning how to define goodness, and elevating goodness in our lives. And the truth is, we can go on and on and on about all of the karbanos that we had this year. But we can go in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, Ela Ezkara. We're going to say that there were 10 karbanos, historical karbanos. But there were so many more karbanos this year. I'm going to say, Ribbono Shel Olam, it should all be a kapara. Each karban should be a kapara for Klal Yisrael. A kapara for the values that these people taught us. And there should not be a need for any further karbanos. Because Ribbono Shel Olam is going to hear us storming the Shemayim with our tefilos. He's going to hear Klal Yisrael coming together even when it's difficult to do so. And it's difficult to maintain a sense of respect for every member of Klal Yisrael when we so clearly are not seeing eye to eye on life or death issues sometimes. But he's going to see that it all comes from love and that we don't chas v'shalom celebrate anyone else being wrong. I mentioned to my Talmidim last week, there's no greater hope that we have, let's say in our more cautious community, than that we would be wrong. We wish we were wrong. Unfortunately, recent weeks tell us we weren't wrong. But we wish, we so wish we were wrong. That's what we hope for. We don't say, look, they're getting sick again. Aha! You see? We wish we were wrong. Because we love every Jew. We don't want to see a Jew suffer for a moment. Responsible, irresponsible. We don't want to see anyone suffer for a moment. and we're going to come together and come to the Ribbono Shelom and Yom HaKippurim Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, because Yom Kippur is a day of Kabbalah Satar, it's a day of Luchos Shnias, and the Ribbono Shelom is going to say that I see that the message has been received, and that this year that had to have this painful message where life wasn't easy, but life became more meaningful. And we're ready to become tzaddikim. We're ready to define ourselves as tzaddikim. Tzaddikim and tzidkaniyos. And our every decision is going to be viewed through that prism. And of course we're going to fail here and there. But fundamentally we now appreciate goodness. We appreciate life. We appreciate the value of every moment of time. How precious those moments are. How quickly they can go away. Eila Ezkara. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to be mekabel our karbanos be'ezras Hashem ba'ahava and grant us all a gemar chasimah tova. Gemar chasimah tova.